This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Football is over. Pitchers and catchers start reporting around baseball this week, and we'll continue looking around the AL East as the Orioles competition in division, and let's focus in on the Tampa Bay Rays, and Mark Topkin covers the Rays for the Tampa Bay Times. Joins us now, courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline, and Mark, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So what did you think, now that it's essentially over, what did you think of the Rays offseason?
The part about change they made to the team, or the part about losing their stadium and maybe deal? Like, you know, you tell me which way, with the bad or the worst?
Both. Let's go with a combo platter there.
So from the player standpoint, I think probably the easiest way to describe it is, pretty minimal changes. The additions that they made, Danny Jansen, a guy that's obviously familiar to AL, people who watch AL East games, having been with the Blue Jays for a long time and then the Red Sox for a little while last year, brought him in a catcher. I mean, he's a decent offensive player. He's around catcher league average, which for the Rays will be a significant improvement, because that has been a major issue for them over the last few years, since I think probably Zunino was really good. It would be the last year they had really some offense from a catcher. And then kind of a surprise move, they spent a bunch of money signing Ha-Seong Kim, the Korean shortstop who'd been with the Padres the last 4 years, to a two-year deal. There's an opt-out after 1 year, so it may not be that big. But $13 million, $16 million for them. He'll be the highest-paid player at 13 on the current team. And if he gets the $16 million salary next year, I think that'll be the highest salary they've ever paid a player. But anyway, he's hurt. He's coming off shoulder surgery. They know that. The plan is available sometime in May. So, again, that works. That addresses another big issue, because we know their shortstop production has been really bad. So they think they would improve there. They love Taylor Walls' defense, but he can't hit. So it's kind of a combination. They tried to improve a couple of their major areas. Their story with them is going to be the pitching. The guy's coming back. Shane McClanahan, Baltimore native. Drew Rasmussen, two guys who had elbow surgery. McClanahan missed all of 24. Rasmussen came back in August as a two-inning, 40-pitch max reliever. They're both going in the rotation. They've already got four guys that are pretty good. But there's a little bit of, like, workload issue, question, concern with each one of those guys. So they say they're not going to go with a six-man. So I think you're going to see is a kind of a sliding scale here. I mean, Rasmussen could have been put into the bullpen, and they had a talk with him this offseason. He really wanted to go back in the rotation, and they made that agreement with him and then gave him a contract extension. They felt that good about it. So it's interesting to see how that shakes out, but having six pretty good starters to go into camp and a decent amount of, like every team has, you know, AAA, veteran bounce-around type of guys to fill in if somebody does get hurt, but that's going to probably be their story. The bullpen ended up really good last year after they got rid of the guys we all knew who they were and brought up some guys we didn't know who they were. So if they're starting rotation, you know, if McClanahan's McClanahan, if Rasmussen can be Rasmussen before his injury, and then Boz, Taj Bradley, Ryan Pepiot, Zach Littell all do about what they did last year, that's going to be pretty good. Bullpen could be really good. Offense, maybe it's a little better with those couple additions, but they're really banking on bounce backs. Josh Lowe had a down year. Christopher Morelli got him from the Cubs. He had a rough year. Johnny DeLuca didn't do much till the last month when he got to play every day. He's going to be the center fielder. They traded Jose Siri. Brandon Lau has to be healthy. Yandy Diaz has to be healthy. They love Junior Caminero, the rising prospect at third. So I think long-winded answer is I don't know. I mean, they scored 604 runs, I think it was, last year, second worst in the majors, only ahead of the White Sox, so kind of last in the majors, I guess, technically. And the year before, they scored 840, which was a franchise record. So somewhere in the middle, they'd be really happy, I think, to get back in that 720, 750 range and see where that leads them, with the pitching being as good as they hope it to be.
Well, I wanted to dig down on the six-man thing, because are you buying? Like, I don't know that I'm buying what they're selling, because they're so interchangeable in the bullpen. You've got guys coming off injuries, and I'm sure they want to avoid a huge spike in innings pitch for, you know, Pepio and Bradley after getting their feet wet. Like, it would, and they're not right. Like they're not stuck to their old ways. Like, this has always been a forward thinking franchise. Like, is this not screaming out for a 6-man rotation?
Well, I think it is if you could have like 14 or 15 pitchers, because their other concern is that they're even overthinking this, because obviously there's parts of the year where it rains in Baltimore and it rains in Atlanta and it's really hot, but they are being really proactively concerned about how playing outdoors this year and the potential of games getting stopped early in the game and losing a starter, getting delayed by rain. And they want that 8-man bullpen, and they may end up carrying two quote unquote long guys, like 2-3 inning capable type guys in that bullpen, and have like 3 or 4 of them at Durham with, you know, their bags being told to have a bag packed. Because they are concerned how this could just, and look, I mean, I've covered enough games in Baltimore. It happens. You know, you get that game where it's going to rain, they're not sure, and then, you know, if the Orioles have their best starter going, let's wait it out. Let's wait another hour. You don't want to take a chance on losing that guy. But if the Orioles don't have a good starter going and the other team does, let's play. The guy gets knocked out after an inning because of rain, oh well. You know, you have that whole thing going on. So I think they're being really concerned with that, and they want to keep that extra bullpen spot available.
Mark, you mentioned Junior Caminero earlier, and he dealt with injuries last year. What are you expecting out of him in 2025?
Well, if you saw the bat flip and the home run try in Game 7 of the Dominican Series Final, I'm waiting for that bat to come down is what I'm first waiting for. But this is a guy with a ton of talent. They thought that in the minor leagues. You know, he was hurt last year. He had some hamstring quad issues at AAA, and it sidelined him for a good chunk of the first half of that season. And then they wanted to be sure he was healthy, ended up not bringing him up until sometime in August. But this is a guy that has a chance to be a star type of player. He's also got, you know, the right attitude. If he wants to be that guy. He likes the pressure. He likes the attention. He likes the spotlight. The defense, the Rays had some concerns. They were admittedly pleased last year after they saw him play it at the big league level. They were a little worried how that was going to look at third base. But this is a guy who could be a superstar player for them. And, you know, being a star in the Dominican Series in a short sample size and against, you know, not all major league quality players is different than being up in the big leagues and playing every day in the American League East. But they see some potential there for this guy to really be something.
We're talking with Mark Topkins, Inside Access, here on The Fan. Mark, where do you see Tampa's place in this division right now? Where do they slot to you?
Probably somewhere after the Yankees and Orioles, and I don't really have a good feel for the Red Sox because I don't really understand what they did this offseason either. I think the Blue Jays seem like maybe the last place team, but I mean, if they only could sign at somebody, right? trying is not counting for them. But, I think and I'm trying to be really, you know, sincere about this and not just, you know, buying what the Rays are selling, like you said earlier, but I think there's going to be a wide variance of how this could work for them. I mean, I think Pecota has them at 82 wins right now with fourth place, but like on the fringe of the third wild card race in the American League. And, you know, maybe it's a little worse than that. Maybe it's a little better than that. Maybe they're like, you know, 80 to 90, somewhere in that category. I think it's just hard to know, you know, how are those pitchers going to hold up? Are they going to be healthy? You're right. Pepio doubled his innings from 23 to 24. Boz has never thrown more than 120 innings in any season. Taj Bradley as a pro. I mean, Taj Bradley's never thrown more than 150 innings in any season. So, you know, they've got to do that. So, yeah, I think you're right in a way. It's not going to look like a six-man rotation where they're going to go one through six, but I think there's going to be a week where somebody gets skipped, somebody gets a 10-day or 15-day, you know, injured list fatigue stint. Yeah, they've got a really crazy schedule, too, because it's really heavy home games early and not a ton of days off early because they wanted to minimize their exposure to playing at home in July and August, which is the worst time of year, obviously, between weather and heat. So they've got a ton of home games early, a ton of road games late. There's just a lot of factors, and they're going to have to get off to a good start. They have a stretch after the first part of the season. I think I got it here. They go Braves, Red Sox, Yankees, D-backs, Padres, Royals, Yankees, Phillies, Brewers. Wow. I mean, that streak that I just told you ends on May 11th. Do you think if you're not playing well, you could be in a heck of a hole by the middle of May? So there's a lot of just factors that I don't know that I have a good feel for yet, like I said, on the variance of where they could end up.
So, complete oversimplification, but if all those things being equal, let's say that the pitching is healthier because, God, it can't be worse, and the bullpen is still legit, if Josh Lowe plays like he did 2 years ago, this team is flirting with a playoff opportunity. And if it's more like it was last year, then the offense is cooked.
I think that's pretty fair. I mean, Josh Lowe, if you want to pick one guy, you know, put it on the one guy's performance that, you know, if he's good or bad, it could drive the whole thing. Probably him. I mean, Morel's a puzzle. This guy was 30, you know, playing in Wrigley, 30 homer average over a couple years, you know, or close to it. And they saw no power from him last year after they got him. So he's a little bit of a puzzle. They think DeLuca's going to be really good. But that's based on a month of playing every day at the end of the season last year. So I don't know that. And Caminero, like I said, if what we saw in the Winter League was a preview of what this guy can do, he's going to be a beast. I mean, Albert Pujols managed him, and there were some quotes from some of our Dominican friends who are journalists, and where Pujols was just raving about him. I think he at one point called him the future of baseball and a future Hall of Famer. That's a little on the hot side, but even if he was only kind of meaning that, that's pretty good praise for a guy who knows.
Mark Topkin covers the Tampa Bay Rays for the Tampa Bay Times. Mark, always great, man. Baseball will be here before you know. We'll have to get you over to Pickles this year before a game.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hey, all right, guys. Yep.
We'll continue talking baseball next, all the young dudes. And what are we expecting from Mean Dean Kramer this year? We'll tell you next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here on the Fan.
It's felt like you guys haven't been able to get everybody on the same page as far as offense clicking at the same time as pitching staff, as defense. Is there anything that needs to change to kind of pull together here with 3 weeks remaining?
I wish that was my job to tell you, but that's not my job. My job is to go out there and pitch. That's a question for the higher ups, you know, the guys who make the decisions of who plays, who doesn't play, and all that stuff. So I wish I could tell you, but I've got no answer for that.
Dean Kramer, that's part of our greatest hits package. He don't know what but putting the roster together. He just goes out, work here. Yeah, I just go out and pitch every fifth or this year sixth day. He was 8-10 with a 4-1-0 last year. Had some injuries, so he only pitched 129 innings. The year before, 13-5 with a 4-1-2, 172 innings. What do you expect from Dean Kramer this year?
League average starting pitching performance. I think he is sort of the poster boy for that, and that's value, because we've seen in this league a lot of teams that are running guys out there who are less than league average, and hell, for a good period of 5 or 6 years, the Orioles barely had any starters who were league average. So the fact that, you know, Dean Kramer's profile doesn't stick out as much anymore, because frankly they've now got a lot of league average or slightly above league average pitchers, starting pitchers, like, doesn't make it a bad thing. I think the most interesting development for me last year with Dean Kramer was he started throwing a splitty, and then he started throwing a splitty a lot. And by the end of the year, it was his third most used pitch. This is a pitch that he hadn't thrown. I mean, there was a point in time where he had a six-pitch arsenal, and this wasn't one of them. So the fact that last year he kind of simplified things and was down to really four pitches for the most part. I mean, that curveball kind of fell by the wayside, I felt like, in the second half as the splitter rose. So he pretty much four-seam, cutter, splitty, and sinker. And that split finger pitch was a hell of a pitch for him. I mean, he threw it almost 20% of the time. The league batted 139 off of it and slugged just 248 off of it. So I think that was huge for him. Conversely, the league hit the four-seamer harder than they had in 3 years. And you're kind of going to live and die with that pitch. I mean, you can get by throwing it less than a third of the time, which is what he did, but you're going to have a hard time not throwing a fastball at least 30% of the time or something like that. So we'll see if he can locate that pitch a little better and throw a few fewer meatballs, because that's really where he got himself into trouble. I mean, the long ball continues to be an issue for him. And for a guy who overall isn't well above league average and average exit velocity and hard hit percentage. It's just some of those can't miss meatballs that end up hurting him and cutting his starts a little short.
And it seems like they two outs or put away pitches, those situations where they end up going yard on him. But the split finger that you were mentioning, Jason, for how effective it was and the fact that it just started, 139 batting average against that, really, really good. And the other thing about Dean, and we've seen this over the past couple of years, he's had some big-time moments for them in games
definitely.
Where they need a stopper, in games where they need someone to provide length. Against the AL East last year, six starts against the East, 3-1, 2.91 ERA.
Wow.
And he was really, really good against the Yankees
yes.
as well, guys. So he's had some big-time moments for them. Is he going to have some stinkers? Absolutely. And that's part of the reason why he's the league average pitcher, which isn't a terrible thing to have on your starting rotation.
See, they're sliding around the 4 or the 5 guy. Is that where we think he is? I know they got 3 threes and 2 fours and a 5. Like, I guess he's back end.
I mean, look, I don't really care where they put him. Can they get a couple years ago? He threw almost 180 innings pitched. Can you get to, you know, 160, 165, 170? If he's able to do that, then you know, and continue to produce at the level he's produced at, that's a very effective back end starter. And to Bone's point, if he can bring it just to like he has, step it up a notch when the adrenaline's flowing in some of those rivalry games, then all the better. I do just wonder, like, what he's thinking. Like, so Bradish is gone this year. I don't care what they say. Like, nobody can really count on Bradish.
Yeah.
So their former best pitcher is gone. They traded for an ace a year ago. He's gone. They brought in a dude from Japan who's never pitched in a game that matters with a Major League Baseball before, and they brought in a 41-year-old. I mean, is Mean Dean, like,
give me the ball?
Does he think he's better than the number 4 starter on this team? Like, I mean, and I'm not saying he's not. Like, if Charlie Morton pitches like he did last year, great. I just don't know that you can bank on that changing not just divisions, but changing leagues and being 41 years old. I just don't know.
So maybe Dean's, like, your third starter behind Grayson and Eflin.
I mean, he might be. Like, as this thing gets moving, I think, like we just talked to Mark Tompkin about, I think they're going to have 6 starters.
Yep.
And he might be in the top half of that until or unless they make a move between now and the deadline to get a more upper echelon pitcher. But, like, could it be Eflin, Grayson, Kramer? Especially if Morton does hit the wall? Yeah.
It's definitely possible.
It's going to be fun. As pitchers and catchers reporting this week down in Florida. Coming up next, another edition of Bone Work, and Bone had an assignment, got to listen to the Beach Boys. We'll get his grade.
No, it was the Clash.
I'm sorry, the Clash. Yeah, it wasn't Pet Sounds. It was the London Calling. I apologize. And so we'll get his review of London Calling and also give him a new assignment. This time we're doing TV. We're going to do TV.
Maybe watch some episodes of a classic sitcom.
Yeah, I can see that.
Wet his whistle a little bit.
Yeah, because he watches nothing. So that's next here on The Fan. So another edition of Bone Work, and this weekend music was the assignment, and the
I mean, he could have started as soon as last Tuesday.
Yeah, you could have.
I don't have to wait till the last minute.
Well,
Diamond Dave would probably wait till the last minute to turn in his assignment.
And he had work yesterday. He was all over TV during the Maryland game.
How long is that drive to College Park?
Oh, that's exactly when I listened to it.
Plenty of time.
That's exactly when I listened to it.
So
it was, you know, it was okay. It was okay. I think some of the music and just the, I was more interested, like, Joe Strummer, he's the vocalist, right?
Yes. Well, Mick Jones sings quite a bit too, but yes.
The vocals on it are just kind of meh for me. And I guess that's...
Well, yeah, that's not really the strength of the band.
I know. But I guess I lean more into vocals, where I think the music was cool. And look, we played quite a few of those songs, right? Spanish Bombs, Lost in a Supermarket, London Calling, I think, is in the playlist.
I don't think so.
A couple of the other ones. There were some cool, like Jimmy Jazz. I was kind of into that song. That was a little different from the rest of the album. The Guns of Brixton. That one was funky, man.
Yeah.
That one was really funky. It was all right. It was all right, is what I would say.
Did you like Clampdown? That's on there, right?
Clampdown was good. Yeah, I have, London Calling, Jimmy Jazz, The Right Profile. I actually really liked that song. That one might have been my favorite, to be honest.
It's about Montgomery Cliff. It's really, it kind of requires more than one listening, I would say that.
I feel like every album, for the most part.
Can you understand why in 1980... this might have been seen as groundbreaking, and it, could you listen to this and in any way say like, oh wow, so like this might be kind of like why like sort of world music or more eclectic music became a little more mainstream, or this could be sort of the grounds of like what alternative rock or indie rock could be to a certain degree, or how they meld so many different styles.
Yes.
Reggae and ska.
There's a lot of different styles.
Punk and, you know, even like in Brand New Cadillac, right? Like some sort of old school rockabilly. Did any of that strike you in any way?
Oh, for sure. So this came out 1979.
Yeah, basically.
So, yeah, yeah. December 14th, I was way not alive at that point. Yeah, I can definitely see how it would influence some other bands to come in the rest of the decade and then some. Moving forward, it was very unique in the fact that, yes, there were different vibes to several different songs. It wasn't like they were just picking a lane and sticking to that lane.
Did you mention favorite songs on the album?
I was just mentioning them. London Calling, Jimmy Jazz, okay. Right Profile. I really like that. Lost in the Supermarket, which I know is in there. Guns of Brixton was very interesting just throughout that. Yeah, no, there were several interesting songs. I can't say that I'm going to listen to them all regularly.
Well, Guns of Brixton's interesting because it's one of the rare songs. That's not Joe or Mick.
Oh, really?
That is Paul, the bassist, on vocals there.
I just liked it how... like
the bass line?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Spanish Bombs? No.
No, Spanish Bombs is on my list.
Spanish Bombs is on your list.
Spanish Bombs is on my list.
I think Hateful is the most slept on song on that album. Nobody ever talks about Hateful. It's basically sort of like almost a hate letter to someone's drug dealer.
You see, now that I have it all lined up now, I felt like the beginning of the album, I thought it got better as the album went. So, well, I guess Jimmy Jazz was third. But... yeah, I felt like it got better as it went on.
Did you? I'm just looking at Wikipedia.
Rudy Can't Fail, that's another. Oh, man, such a good song. We got to play London Calling, I think, throughout the show there, Beltway Ben.
Did you know that the Man in Me? Weird.
That was like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
The Man in Me was written by Bob Dylan.
Really?
Yeah, I'm looking at Wikipedia right now. He wrote The Man in Me, yeah. But all the songs on the album were mainly written by Strummer and Jones, but...
Now, in terms of your favorite albums, is this close to the top for you, at the top?
It's way up there. Sandinista is my favorite Clash album. But like when I was young, Sandinista was like the Clash album I liked the least because it was maybe the least typical of like early Clash. Like if you got into the Clash through their first couple of albums, and it's, you know, sort of like 1977 sort of pure punk with a little bit of a reggae edge and a little bit of sort of a different beat, maybe a little bit more of an African beat at times.
Is Sandinista Rock the Casbah? Is that on
that's
that?
Combat Rock.
Okay.
That's the final real Clash album before they broke up. But
so how many albums?
Sandinista is like even longer. Like this is really two albums in one. I mean, London Calling's a double album. Sandinista is basically a quadruple album. There's a lot of filler in there, but it's a solid like three albums in Sandinista. But it's even more eclectic than this, and sort of even less sort of mainstream than a lot of this is. Probably a little less pure poppy than some of this is. I think, but this is a masterpiece and. I don't know. Anybody who appreciates modern rock music 1950 on should listen to, at least have some familiarity with London Calling,
so you,
I think.
So you said Sandinista is one of their
Sandinista came out right before this.
Right before, okay, because this says this is the third studio album, so that was the second.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's also EPs in there. Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah.
So what do you grade it, Bone?
That's a tough 7 out of 10.
That's a good grade.
Seven. Yeah. You know, it was
I feel
good.
Like he's throwing me a bone, but that's fine.
No, I...
Will you listen to it ever again?
No, he won't.
No. I will not.
He'll listen to a whole bunch of derivative stuff that would never exist if not for this. Yeah. But that's how it goes.
His voice is like... I don't want... Grating is probably
he
too
He is
strong,
the everyman. Do you think like his name is actually Joe Strummer?
I would
it's
guess
not.
Not.
So why do you think someone might pick a name like Joe Strummer? Like, because he's not the greatest guitar player in the world, right? And he's not the greatest singer in the world.
Yeah.
But he is the everyman, and he writes for the everyman.
Yeah.
And his lyrics are, to me, revolutionary and groundbreaking. And so he's got this less than perfect vehicle to sort of use to express it. But I think if you really read the lyrics and it and if you understand his point of view, him trying to oversing it or him trying to make his voice more important than the music, I think would be counter to the ethos of the entire band.
It's just like the British Bruce Springsteen. That's how I feel about him. The everyman. It's what he writes. It's interesting. We'll go TV.
Yes.
Sitcoms. So where do you want to hit him?
I've got two that are similar just from different eras, and one clearly inspired the other. All in the Family, where the center of the story is Archie Bunker, I guess kind of basically a lovable racist. Boy, was he before his time.
Lovable racist.
That's exactly what he
was. I mean, that's sort of...
That's a very interesting combo plot.
And he's surrounded by people in his orbit who maybe are a little more tolerant than him, and this is sort of Archie's... sort of interactions with a modern world, like coming out of sort of the 60s into the 70s and Vietnam and women getting more rights and the civil rights movement. And so it's sort of like the coming to grips of that. So All in the Family, again, I think, I don't know too many people who wouldn't say it's among the best television ever done in this country. And then there's Family Ties, which is, to me, a spinoff of All in the Family, where you've got Alex P. Keaton, who maybe could have been Archie's kid, and
young
Alex
Republican.
P. Keaton is the young Republican in a house full of older liberals. So it's sort of, to me, it's always been a bit of a takeoff in that. And so it's sort of Alex Keaton in the 80s, where now conservatism is in vogue again, and you've got Reagan's first term. And so everybody around him is kind of dealing with this world that seems to be going in an opposite direction from where they thought it was going, and the central character.
So it sounds pretty deep.
It's also a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And both are,
I mean,
the characters are amazing. Both are incredibly well written. But we're talking we're talking like a 15-year chasm between them.
I went with my favorite. And then a show that exists because of my favorite show. So Seinfeld, which is my favorite sitcom of all time, and Jason and I used to have interesting conversations about this. The other one is Curb Your Enthusiasm, which wouldn't exist without Seinfeld, but that's Larry David who produced Seinfeld, but stars in Curb. And they're very similar, but different. Jason loves Curb, but hates Seinfeld. So that's where I went.
My grandfather's huge into Seinfeld. So
Seinfeld's my favorite.
I've seen some random episodes, but never, I haven't seen a bunch. And Curb, I feel like I've seen clips.
You've seen clips, but never watched an episode.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So but am I right to say, Jason, you love Curb but hate Seinfeld?
Correct.
Yeah. So that, which I find fascinating, but that's also why I'm fascinated by Jason.
But Curb is probably the more risque.
Yeah.
Seinfeld.
It's on HBO. It's so you can curse and all that.
Yeah.
I find they're both brilliant in their own way. Larry David takes stuff to another level in Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I'm assuming Curb's going to win out of this bunch.
I don't know.
Probably because it's the most recent. Not
I don't know that it's fair to assume anything.
So whichever series wins, I'm watching the first handful of episodes.
Yeah,
I like think season like one,
5 or 6 episodes, something like that.
Okay,
I would, if Seinfeld were to win, I would not watch season one because it didn't catch its stride until season two.
Because Seinfeld,
it was like a 12 episode first season. I would not watch. It's not even the real. The first episode of Seinfeld is not the show.
Because Seinfeld, it's not like a continuing story.
No.
They're each on their own.
There are arcs.
Yeah.
But no.
I mean, you could even Google like 6 best episodes.
Yes.
Or 5 best episodes. I mean, I don't think any of them, like All in the Family would probably be the toughest one for you to jump in on. But
that's still great.
All in the Family's not going to win this, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, because our listeners don't know. Well, we do probably have older white people that listen, so they know All in the Family. The same people that didn't like the halftime show yesterday.
Yes.
Who I got multiple texts about yesterday. Coming up next, though, more Bone. It's TMI with TIM. What you got?
Yeah, we'll get back into the Super Bowl. We talked a lot about the Chiefs' incredible run with Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid the past couple of weeks, but now... here are the Eagles. They've been to the Super Bowl 2 times in the past 3 years. They've won 1. The NFC is a very weak conference. Could they go on a run? We'll get into it next on The Fan.
It's T-Bone time, TMI with TIM, and the floor is yours.
Got to give a lot of credit to Howie Roseman and his roster building this past offseason. Going out in free agency, bringing in Saquon Barkley, who had a quiet Super Bowl, but we know what he meant to the Eagles this entire season.
The ball 24 times or whatever.
Zach Bond, how about that interception last night? That was unbelievable. He was fantastic. And bringing in the rookies through the draft, Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, all of them having big, big impacts in Super Bowl 59, and now they're looking to run it back. We heard Eric DaCosta at the season-ending press conference a couple weeks ago that doesn't have a lot of big decisions this year. Well, Howie doesn't have a lot of big decisions either, guys. When you look at the free agents that the Eagles have, Zach Bond, which is the big one, Mekhi Becton, Josh Sweat, those are the only 3 players that are set to hit unrestricted free agency that played 50% of the season snaps or more. So that's a good spot to be in if you're the Eagles. And it's not as if they're over the cap right now. And when we were talking about Howie to open the show, something that he has done an exceptional job at is circumventing the salary cap. Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was the first guy to find the loophole avoidable years and really lean into that.
I'm not sure who was maybe the first or whatever. Look, you want to give credit. Give credit to the owner. The owner's committed to spending highly over the cap. It doesn't take mathematic genius to figure out if you're giving me a budget that is 50 or 60 million above the cap, I'll figure out how to get us under it. I think it has more to do with the commitment of the owner to trust Howie to spend in a way that's going to keep us in the mix, to not spend frivolously the way so many teams and GMs do in this league.
And what's really crazy is this team is largely intact through the 2026 season, when Jalen Hurts, Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, Quinyon Mitchell, DeJean, Lane Johnson, Landon Dickerson, Jalen Carter, Saquon Barkley, they are all under contract.
Howie's done a great job of drafting the last few years.
Absolutely.
Through 2026. And we know how things can change year to year. They were in the Super Bowl in 2022 and then just fell off a cliff to end 2023. And we're all wondering if Sirianni's going to get fired after they got blown out at Tampa Bay wild card weekend. But the NFC is just such an inferior conference, especially when you consider the quarterback position, where Lamar and Mahomes and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow, and they're all in the AFC among others, where you look at the NFC and how it lays out. Yeah, Detroit's going to get healthy again, and they'll be able to run it back. But Washington in their own division, I mean, outside of that, who are the big
Detroit lost a lot of coaches, man.
Yeah, a lot of brain drain.
I was looking at some of the futures today. Green Bay is interesting to me again. I don't think Jordan Love was ever healthy this year. I think he went into that game in Brazil a little janky, and he clearly got hurt in that game. And I think he came back too soon and was sort of chasing his fundamentals and chasing his sort of purest form because he was compensating for this, that, or the other. That's a really young team. I mean, I think it's been the second youngest team in the NFL two straight years, and they have built up some playoff calluses. So I think Green Bay is primed. The West, to me, is vulnerable in that conference.
Who's it like? I like part of me likes the Rams because I love what they draft on defense.
Stafford's coming back.
Yeah, but that's what's going to get it. Like, is Stafford back? And, and you know, Cooper Kupp's not
gone.
Right. So, I mean, it'll be a good defense. Like, they'll be, look, McVay knows what he's doing. They'll be in the mix, but like, don't think they're a juggernaut. A lot of people will anoint Washington. I'll just say it's a lot harder the second year when there's real expectations on you.
My point is, and you brought up the possibility of Howie going after Myles Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to lose a ton of pieces free agent-wise, and they have the ability to add to that really talented core because there just really aren't many holes at all on this football team heading into the offseason.
But like, you look at, okay, we're always looking at everything through who the prism of who has the huevos to knock off the Chiefs.
Yeah.
This guy
does. Yeah.
Will DaCosta do Howie Roseman type moves? And not just DaCosta, silent Steve. Will they? Because let's say he does get Myles Garrett.
Good luck.
How do you counter?
They didn't have to
some of those
him.
Moves. He will not be afraid to throw multiple draft picks at a best of breed player and pay him more than anybody's made at that position. And he's willing to do that across multiple position groups. Will this ownership group be? If not, then you better have you better outdraft him. And it's hard to do both.
By the way, you mentioned the offense on a contract. They just scored the most points ever in the championship game and Super Bowl combined, 95. 55 in the championship game, 40 in the Super Bowl. And they could have scored more yesterday. Like this.
Absolutely.
they called off the dogs after after Devonta Smith caught that touchdown. They called off the dogs.
Yeah.
Coming up next, what could the Ravens, and we've talked about it a lot, but what did Jonas Schaefer think about the Super Bowl and what the Ravens could learn from it? Jonas Schaefer covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner. He joins us next here on The Fan.